just had to know what to do with the rations when we got them, you know, and for the company. Ammunition, which the colour sergeant used to see to take up the front and all that.
So where was the ammunition kept? I presume it was kept separate to the rest.
Yeah, if I remember rightly, looking from where we were, the A Company stores used to go down towards the main gate. It was over, I think it was over on the left hand side, same as the MT, you know, the motor transport and that. So it was around there, that's where we used to get that. If there was anything to get.
What about paperwork? There must have been quite a bit of paperwork involved in the movement of the stores. Did you have much to do with that?
Well, the colour sergeant was really the main man for that. Like, you know, we just used to get orders from him to do it. Go with him to draw the rations at a central spot. And he knew what he was getting for the company, you know, the amount of people in the company. So it was up to him, really, to get it. Echelon was farther back. You know, it was a canny way back that. I don't think it was a very big place, not to be honest. That was where they used to get the main rations and that for to bring up to the companies, you know, up the Echelon to take over the companies.
What sort of area would be Echelon cover then? Would that cover more battalions? Do you draw your supplies from the Echelon?
Yeah, but there was a lot more. We're at the memory of it, different battalions and that, all in one there. So really, there wasn't a very big commitment of people down there. You know, I forget now what they call the main bloke. You know, like the colour sergeant, and one from him, I forget now what he was. But he used to do that at B Echelon. I didn't have much to do with that, I'll be honest, at B Echelon. But that's where all the supplies come from down there.
And their supplies went to you in the Echelon?
In Echelon,
and then it was your job to supply
the companies.
The
company. We split up, we used to have boxes. We used to measure out, you know, amount of people in each platoon and company and that, you know, and take them up to the front line.
What time of year was this?
Well, that would be about the April, I think, or just die about the April.
The battalion came out of the line in the May. How did that affect you, the Echelon?
Well, not really. They went to, they come back to the line, part of the line behind there. You used to have names, you know, for them. I think we just stopped there, I think. Because, like, again, we were going back up in there. 355, where you hadn't to be too far away. So I think we stopped there, like, we didn't move in our Echelon. Because I think they knew where they were going back to.
Did you continue to supply the battalion from the Echelon when it was in reserve?
We still got the groceries, and I put it that way, the groceries, and took them to the lads. That's how we used to meet them.
So that would obviously change your routine slightly, did it? Can you remember that?
I think it did, because I'd spend more time with the lads, my mates and that. I didn't have to rush up at night, you know, do the work during the night, and rush out before it got daylight. So when we took them up, I mean, I got more time with them. You know, I would talk to them and that, my mates and all that.
Yeah, I was going to ask you what sort of contact you had with your ex-colleagues in the battalion.
Then, when they were out of the line, I could. I used to get a game of football again, you know, put that way. I had what you call the Korean Cup. And we did get into the, I think it was the semi-final. The only thing was, then, Teddy Brown and them were footballers. The team sort of got split. You know, they were coming home on Lee, on Demob. And the team who had left way wasn't the same, so we got beaten. It was either the semi-final or the final, I forget now what it was. But there you go, we had more time, you know. They mixed with the lads and that, you know. I think it wasn't very far away, so we had to go up at night and have a drink. to supply them with the groceries now. But yeah, that's where it all comes from. Yeah, sure.
Can you remember how long you were in reserve?
Well, I think that time they weren't in very long. Then they were back in again, went to 355.
Went back to 355.
Yeah, they went up and there was a bit of activity, I think, then. Set time.
No, you were supplying a company, weren't you?
Oh, yeah, I was here, still here.
Were they in a different position when they went back to 355?
I'm not quite sure. I couldn't swear. There might have been a different. It was a big hill. I'm not sure whether we, or farther over to the left or whatever. I'm not quite sure. I couldn't say.
And I guess then it would be back to the same routine again.
Just the same routine, supply and demand, that was on.
Again, on a nightly basis.
Oh, yes, it was all done at night, aye. Up the front, anyway.
Did you know anything about what was going on in the wider world, things with these talks?
Panmunjom, there was a light in the sky, searchlight. When the talks was on, you were praying that it was going to be but when that light wasn't on, where they weren't talking. So when you used to see that on, you had a bit of a hope, there was going to be something done, you were praying there was something going to happen, anyway, put it out with you. We could see it, in Panmunjom, like I say, we're just hoping.
What about rumours?
Well, yeah, you did get them, what was going to happen and all this was near finished and the talks had broken down and all that. We used to get a paper in Korea, Korean paper, for battalions. And they used to tell you in there about how the talks was going, when it had happened and what was, prisoners and all that, and things like that. So, you were living in hope.
What about contact with home and radio and letters? Did they contain much news?
No, I can't remember my mother saying much about it because I didn't know. Over in this country, I didn't know whether it was ever talked about much Korea. I'm not sure. They would get the newsreels, and pictures and that, what's that problem? I mean, I wasn't here, so I couldn't see it. I didn't know if they did or not. Like, it was always the forgotten war. So, I'm not sure. But, my mother and I don't think they ever said much when I used to write to us and that, about it. I hope I'm all right and all that, not long now before you're coming back, It was getting up to, September was my demob date, so it was getting near then.
You'd obviously know that you were due for demob in September,
wouldn't
you?
Oh, yeah. You had your demob number 5118, And when, Teddy Brown and Jackie Milne and them were coming along, 5114, the next one was 5115, you were always watching for the board. I just see that it was your turn, 5118.
So how would you find out how would that
be? I think we got to know through off the colour sergeant, like me. Well, the other storming, he was a regular, Dixon. And the other, the peer clerk, I think he was out, or he was after, well after me, I think. Followed him all, So, really, the notice board, put your boot in the nut when it was your turn.
Before we come on to the demob and the procedure for that, just to finish off, you've obviously continued to supply your company.
Mm-hmm.
Are you still going up to the front on a nightly basis?
Oh, yeah, aye. Yeah, every night, you took stuff up in that.
Were you doing that every night?
I might get you might get an odd night off. Maybe Dixon would do it. I would do it, the colour sergeant. Maybe he's not taking anyone up, or just do it himself, or just send you up, But most times, really, he had to go up, to see the major, to see what he wanted and all that, orders.
Did you have much contact with the lads in the
Well, just like the headquarters, you know. I used to see them when I went up. Alan Frost and them, you know, Dewey Brown and them. But not the other lads, just odd occasions you'd see them. If they come out sick, you know, maybe just something like that. Summing up.
Were you getting much news about what was happening at the front line?
Oh, I used to get the colour sergeant would tell me, and on the night we'd get to know, you know, if there was, I mean, if there was anything going on, to stop the trucks going up, you know, till it died down, if there was a bit of a skirmish or something like that, you know, going on or something, or bombardment, and then they would let you in.
Do you remember anything like that happening?
Yeah, but I've normally getting up to, you used to get up to a certain point now, when it was getting put in dark. And if there was anything going on, we used to stop you there. I mean, there was all the other companies as well. And they stopped you till it was till it's safe to go in, put it that way. If they were getting shelled up, something like that, you know, they would stop you. Because they did have a few skirmishes on 355, like, it was very lively.
I think there were a couple of, well, a certain one occasion when there was quite a heavy attack.
Yeah, there was, I can remember that when they were telling us. I mean, Brian, I was back, so I never got really, it was just what I was being told, you know. I mean, I used to look up on a night, up to the front, and I mean, you could see the flashes and things going off and that, you know, I used to, I was still looking at my mates, you know, because, I mean, they were still there. I wasn't, I was pretty safe. But I mean, they weren't, so I used to still think a lot about them and watch up that way, like. Because, yeah, I mean, 355, really, that's the area we're in. I mean, it was a hell of a size. It's a big one. I mean, it's the biggest on the front. So you could see it, you know, these nights. But I seriously think of the lads, like.
Yeah, you must have had mixed emotions and known that you were relatively safe.
Yeah.
The
I did mind. I mean, I knew what they were going through and that. Maybe out on patrol or something like that, and the skirmishes, what they were getting. Like I say, it was pretty active. So I used to still think a lot about them. You know, and, yeah, I mean, there was still one or two getting wounded and killing that, you know, lads.
Did they have anything to do with the evacuation of the
wounded? No, I never took snow like that. No, I never had no day like that. It was all done with the medical. But like it's a jeep. And on each side of the jeep, they had like stretchers, you know, where they used to fetch them out with. Or the helicopter, like one of them old bubble ones, you know, and it had stretchers on the side in case it was emergency, you know, to bring them out. They used to do that.
The battalion moved again.
Well, not really. I can't remember the. There's something stuck in my mind about the valley we went in, and we had to dig out again for the stores, and that, you know. And then, well, like the battalion was up this valley, you know, and we got some rain. Heavy rain, which they used to get in monsoons out there. I got up this morning and farther down in the valley, it was all water, you know. I'm not sure that was the one move we made, you know.
The battalion moved to Yongdong, does that ring a bell?
No, I'm forgetting about that, you know. I can't picture it now. It's that long since. It happened. But remember this. From behind 355, like, mostly. Because the air company was on the top. This is the air show, like the tent, the stores and that. We were up on the top, and then you got them going down, A, B, C, D. And just over the top was like what we used to call a nothing. So Yongdong, no, really, I didn't. I'm not sure about it.
But you think you didn't move the
echelon? We did. Aye, I think that could have been it. Maybe that could have been it. I'm not sure. But I remember that, like when it flood. Now the valley was a swamp. But I don't know. That might have been it.
How long after that before the ceasefire?
Yeah, we'd come off and really we went in there for like 51-18 drunk to come home. And anyway, do you write about the night before we come home?
Well,
before
let's
in Syria.
Up to that. What happened before you get to that night, what happened in the lead up to that final night?
Well, it was just the same routine that nobody knew. We were still talking. And just the same routine. And then the night we were coming home when it all everything went up, you know.
Had you been told you were coming home?
Yeah, we were prepared.
Was that because of the ceasefire?
No, nobody knew about this. We're all prepared to come away that night.
Was that because your particular number?
Yeah, 5118, the mob number. And all hell let loose that night before we set away. Because we thought we weren't going to get away. And Savage, he was coming with us. Well, he had to take leverage up to the front, something like that, to move up. And where he lost his leg, he went into the minefield. He was coming home, wasn't
he? He was part of the RD mob.
Yeah, he was coming home. He was a regular, but he was due for the mob when he was coming home. And anyway, it come through, we had to get our kit, and wrap the trucks, and come back to Seoul. Well, before to go on the mob. To get the train down to, you know, Busan. So we were lucky to get away. And it was the next morning when we got to Busan that we got to know that the armistice had been signed. So we just think he'd let his surplus ammunition off that night against the line, you know. It was lit up on earth. I can't explain it to you. I can't really. Oh, God, it was lit up. I mean, it was a war.
You yourself didn't know that was the final night before the signing?
No, we didn't. We didn't know it. We got down to Busan.
But where were you on that particular occasion? Were you?
I was at the echelon. I was just waiting to get on the trucks, really.
Was that in the park behind 359, or the other part that you mentioned?
No, it was there. It could. Well, I'm not sure if it was 355 or the other one. Where we come instead away from. I'm not sure anyway about that. But that night, bloody hell, the sky was lit up.
What were you thinking?
We thought we weren't going to get away. We thought we wouldn't have to go with the battalion. We thought he was tatting and all that, you know. And he was, oh, God, it was terrible. And I see a joke. Savage, he got his leg blown off.
Was he with you? Did you see that?
No, I didn't go on him, no. He took Major Leverage up the line to see about reinforcing, I think, something like that. So he had to go with it, he had to drive the Jeep. He was his Jeep driver.
So how far towards the front did you get then on that night?
I didn't get up because I was really packed to come survey. In fact, I think I'd handed me a stand running. I'd had my rifle then. I'd handed it in. It was all booked in, I think, everything, you know. So we just thought of normal night, get on the trucks, come here, but he didn't. I couldn't tell you what it was, you know, picture it. God, it all went up. But it was the last. You know, bombardments and that before they signed the peace.
So, you then went on to describe the trip journey the next morning?
Yeah, when the Busan, saw that night, and we got the train, and we travelled overnight down to Busan, and we got to the camp in Busan, and we got into the billets, and we were just getting into. You know, in the bed, on the bed, And this lieutenant who was bringing me home, he was coming home on leave as well, from the mob, Parrot, he called him. And he was in charge of us, and he came rushing in to tell her, you know, that the peace had been signed. So, I mean, we were over the moon, because, I mean, we still had mates up there. We had a good drink that day, you know, because we were really pushed on a couple of days, I think it was, until they got things sorted out.
How many had come off on this day?
I was quite a few. I would say about, you know, from different companies, there was about 20, 30 odd of them, something like that, you know, about 30 odd. Maybe more. And what we did, we did have a bit of sleep, I think, but we went out to the Naffy one, you know, I woke up just to celebrate. And there was some young lads there, DLI, they were waiting to go up, you know, the front. I remember the master more what it was like, and we'd tell them we were glad it was over for their sakes, you know, young lads. We had a good drink.
Do you remember much about Poussin?
Well, not really. It was this camp, and we did have a route along. I'm not sure whether it's the same place as what they've got the graves now. But we went along to see where they just had started preparing, you know, like there for the graves. And they wouldn't let somebody had a camera with her, one of the lads, and he wouldn't let her take it in. And we were having a look for, you know, Major Donoghue's and Wilfie Hall's grave and all that, and old Brian's and that. We did see where they were at, like, but I'm not sure whether it's the same place as when I went back later on in the years. I'm not sure, it could have been, you know, same place, like, and they were just starting with it to make the graveyard.
This has been quite emotional.
Oh, I were all, you know, the lads. Because Eddie O'Brien, he would have come home like before, you know, Wilfie, where Wilfie was a regular, he would have still been there, and Major Donoghue. But, it was an awful sight, really, seeing them, you know, they just starting with. Mine's a lovely place now. I mean, seeing that for where it is, the graves, it's marvellous the way they've done it. When I saw it 3 years since, when I went back, it's marvellous what they do with it.
What are your other recollections of Poussin?
Just having a drink. You know, and then you were, when the armistice where you were free, but we didn't. I didn't think we went out to camp very much. You know, just that. I remember that once getting out to see the graves. We only had about 3 days out to see it. Then we were on this little boat, went to Kyoto in Japan to wait for the boat home, like, you know. It wasn't a big boat, you know, looked like the troop were in it, across to Kyoto. I enjoyed in Kyoto. We had a good fortnight there, you know.
What do you remember about Kyoto?
Well, I mean, you were free and easy, drinking and that, you know. I think it was, I got put on guard one night. It was, you know, bloody hell, I couldn't get over it. You know, you thought you were finished when things like that, you know. Patrolling the wire of the camp. You know, things like that, you know, stopping Japs getting in or whatever. You know, stopping lads getting out as well, you know, like for the brothels and all that, you know. Things like that. But I played a game of football, another game of football. Red hot, you know, I mean, in the summer. Hey, I'm no kidding you, I had to come off. I was breathless. I enjoyed it, like, you know, you kick about.
What sort of camp was it?
Was more or less it was like a holding camp for people coming home, you know. Decent meals and all that. It was all right. And we had to prepare for the, you know, practically straight away, you know, the prisoners from Korea. And we got some straight van out straight away, the Gloucesters. Because I'd gone sick once and stomach again, you know, I was in trouble in the stomach. I was standing in the queue and it was all veterans of war, being prisoners now, Gloucesters and all that. Yeah, I'd be crap with them and telling us tales what they've gone through. You know. Anyway, we had to wait for a boat. We were told we were going on an aircraft carrier. Yeah, coming home, you know, these rumours, what you get, you know. We're coming through the Panama Canal, which would have been interesting, you know, because we'd gone through the sewers, you know, aye, that's what I couldn't understand. And anyway, all of a sudden, there was a boat, the Asturias. They'd come for the prisoners, and we were coming home with them as well, like. So that was the boat I come home on, the Asturias.
Just before I come on, I wanted to talk about your journey home, but before that, any other recollections of Japan and the Japanese people? You stayed in Kyrie?
Oh, they had a hell of a nappy club up in Kyrie, you know. And I don't know exactly how we got to know her, but we got to know that Jock Savage was in the hospital, and I can see it. It was just past the Naffy Club and up a bank to the hospital. So we did go up, and it was him. I mean, that was the last time I ever saw him. And I visited him more, two or three times before I set off. You know, very well, I was like, you know, what had been with him. And he come in that. And that's someone got no, he lost his leg, mate. So I think he'll be out there kind of bit after us, like, you know, until he come home, like. But that was the last time I saw him. But the Kyrie itself, it was an army base. It was bars and brothels and, you know, everything like that. Every time we went into his shop, he got a silk hanky, you know, as a goodwill. When I come home, I had them all there, and my mother got them, you know, silk hankies. Just when he was going to be shot. But I had a good drink. And my cousin was out there at the time, with Jackie Byrne, but I seemed as if I couldn't get in touch with him. I couldn't, and I missed him. You know, when I did see him after I'd come home and he'd come home, somehow I just had missed him all the time, trying to see him. He was, I think it was two or three times on his way to Korea. But he took bad. His son, he was a blonde lad, you know, and he had sunstroke and all that. So he didn't actually get the career. He was out there kind of before me, he was a regular, like, you know. But I never saw him. I wish I had.
What were the locals like, and how were you treated?
Well, you know, I used to see them, like, but in the shops and that, you know, they're pretty decent here. I mean, you were spending a bit of money, you know. I mean, not a lot, because we didn't have a lot. And in the bars, I mean, they had the bars open that for you. But, no, they seemed to be all right. Didn't seem to be, I mean, you did get scuffles, trouble and that in the bars and that, you know, but not really the jobs and that, you know. I didn't have a lot to do in the jobs, really. Well, there was them knocking about, but I don't know, you know, just the odd fight and that. But I never had any trouble, I'll be honest. I was never brought for trouble anyway. So me and my mates, Alan Foster, then, we never looked for it. So we kept out of the way, and all I wanted to do is get back to England, to be honest. But when Joanne joined me, I think we had about a fortnight to 3 weeks in Kyrie. And I think I enjoyed it. Relaxation.